This hour, you'll be glad to know we're not talking politics. We are talking about having our monthly crab conversation with Dr. Jason Kantz and retired Christian counselor Rob Gillette joining me in studio as we talk about Larry Crabb's book, Shattered Dreams, God's Unexpected Path to Joy. And today we find ourselves in chapters 14, 15, and 16, which in the back of the book talk about looking for something better. And so that's where we are today. Welcome the guys here on WWIB and WIB.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I just got to jump in and say, you know, I've been praying for you and Peggy and your next venture. And it, while it was a great surprise and I have mixed feelings about it because I hate to see you leave, I know I feel God's in it.
Well, appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
I think you have a much more excited view of that. I mean, I'm excited for you, but I really don't want you to go because I love you and I'm going to miss you.
Yeah.
So I'm with you too.
And you guys are making reference. Yeah. Last Monday, we made some news here on the radio for those who hadn't heard that our plans as a family to uproot and move to Liberia. Some have speculated or concerned about who the next president will be. No, it's not that. It's we believe God's direction in our life right now. And the plan is 9 months there and 3 months back for year one. And after that, we'll see. So, you guys. Appreciate that. So, and to folks who've emailed and commented on Facebook and stopped me at the Quick Trip. All right. Appreciate all that. So, all right. Well, I'll tell you what, this book, I was reading it aloud as our family was making our way back from a family trip over the weekend to my in-laws in the Maiden Rock area. And I'm latching onto it more and more, even though we've been talking about it for a while, Shattered Dreams from Larry Crabb. Let me just remind people what it's about. Crabb says, on page 27 of the copy I'm looking at, this is my problem with God and perhaps yours. To people whose souls have been inundated with pain, God seems so unresponsive. We pray and nothing happens. And he goes on to talk about how do we find the faith that lets us see what is invisible, so passionately believe that he's always wonderfully and lovingly responsive when he seems so callous. That's the question. What does it mean to hope in God as we continue to live in a world where good dreams shatter and God seems to do nothing about it? And then picking up later, he really defines it early on, just for those who are joining in here as we continue with chapters 14 through 16 today. But he says this, is he looking at the book of Ruth and as to kind of set this all up. And he says that story hinges on one central lesson that Naomi loses her husband, dies. Both of her sons who were married, they die. And her dream was shattered, right, of what she thought her life would be. And so he says this. He says, shattered dreams open the door to better dreams, dreams that we do not properly value until the dreams that we improperly value are destroyed. Shattered dreams destroy false expectations such as the victorious Christian life with no real struggle or failure. They help us discover true hope. We need the help of shattered dreams to put us in touch with what we most long for, to create a felt appetite for better dreams, and living for the better dreams generates a new, unfamiliar feeling that we eventually recognize as joy. So I just thought a transition, I don't know if you saw the golf tournament or not, my viewing of the Masters is I'm supposed to be finishing my taxes. My wife is like, get the taxes done, is the fact of how I left the tournament watching on my phone where Jordan Spieth was, you know, up 3-4, whatever. And I thought, this is over. I'll come back later. So eventually he leads 5. But as he makes the turn in the back 9, he said later to an interviewer shortly after that first major of the year concluded, he said, you know what, with that, I kind of turned away from my attitude initially coming out in terms of going at things aggressively. And tried to play it safe. That led to a bogey at 10, a bogey at 11, and a disaster at 12. This 22-year-old who had shown himself to be so accomplished, winning the Masters in the U.S. Open last year and leading the Masters throughout this year, starting with a 66 on Thursday, he, on a par 3 hole, he dropped it in the water, penalty stroke, dropped it in the water again, and then put it in the sand. He got a 7, a quadruple bogey. He loses. And I just came away thinking, is the Christian life more like this guy, Willett, from the UK, 28 years old, who wins it on his wife's birthday, and they just had a child 2 weeks ago. Is that more like it? Or is it like Jordan Spieth, who has this disaster unfold in front of everybody, born out of mistakes. I felt like, well, there's a shattered dream for you.
Yeah. And I, my sense is as I listen to that, you know, I'm excited for Willett. I mean, there's a, mm-hmm. a deep excitement, and we have those experiences in our lives that are really amazing. But we also have shattered dreams. We also have things that seem to be going our way, at least as what mm-hmm. we expect. Mm-hmm. And then they don't. And I think the important thing is to recognize not necessarily that it's one or the other, but regardless of circumstances, God is in it. You know, and I as I think of that, there are times when things seem to really be going our way, and God is in that. There are times when our lives look much more like Jordan Spieth on the back nine, you know, where we're shooting quadruple bogeys, and God is in it. The purpose being to draw us closer to himself. I was just, as you were talking, you pulled up this quote from C.S. Lewis. And just to set the stage, God does what is required in our lives to draw us closer to him, whether that's amazing, exciting things or whether it's these hard things like Jordan's that happened mm-hmm. at Jordan Spieth. And it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong but too weak. Mm-hmm. We are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered to us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by an offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. Mm. And when we put our hopes in winning a golf tournament or having happy families or any of those things, God is much more interested in our eternal souls and finding him to be the infinite pleasure that we don't otherwise see.
That's a good answer.
Well, C.S. Lewis also, you know, talked about if you put the first things yeah. first, the second things will fall into place. Well, then you got to define what's first
right.
and what's second.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Scripture, and, you know, according to the book we're reading and according to Lewis, mm-hmm. first things would be knowing God, not using God, mm-hmm. not just having, going to God when the circumstances die out
right.
to get better quick or to fix the circumstances, but say, I want these circumstances yeah. fixed, but if that doesn't happen, I still want to know you.
Right.
And so we want to get us, and then out of it, sometimes, not always,
yeah.
the secondary things start to fall into place.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we in our culture, not just in Christian culture, especially in the West since we've become more and more secularized, we have got to a point where, and we've talked about this before, our five senses, what fills the appetites of those five mm-hmm. senses, become our highest priority. And those should be secondary issues. And you know, again, I don't mean this in a way, if you see somebody out there really going through a massive trial, you ought to run up and go to them. Well, that's a secondary issue. Get your priorities right.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. now that, you know, we always deal with this with compassion, but the big thing here is we're born with this attitude because we're born fallen that mm-hmm. the world of our five senses is the priority.
Right.
Because we don't see the other world. Mm-hmm. And God is calling us that whole time. He's trying to seduce us, trying to beckon us mm-hmm. so that we start to want him more than those world of our five senses.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me, too, to think of, and I don't know what Jordan Spieth's faith life looks like. Mm-hmm. I haven't read anything about that. But it makes me wonder, what does it look like for him coming off the back, you know, off of 18? What does that look like? When he's contemplating what just happened? I mean, does he ask more significant questions than, well, I lost so X amount of money and a green jacket? Or is he asking more significant questions about his life, his eternity? Maybe, maybe not. But I think God allows circumstances that where we ask questions about who he is.
Tell you what, if you do take on the Shattered Dreams view, this book from Larry Crabb, that his highest desire is you getting to know mm-hmm. him, and it's not just about the wins,
right.
All of a sudden you will view sports and its association with faith differently, because I couldn't help but see, like, God's highest desire for you, Jordan, is beyond winning the Masters. As cool as that would be, even your second one, it's about knowing God, you know?
Right.
And well, that's interesting and very good, thoughtful answers, guys. And we're going to get more into chapters 14, 15, and 16 under the banner of wanting something better, starting with a strange wedding toast when we continue Front Page WWIB.
Replace a lost garage remote or add an extra one with Chamberlain at Menards. The Chamberlain Universal Garage Remote works with most brands and is easy to program. It has a two-button design for operating up to two garage doors, even if they're different brands. Available in black, blue, or pink. Stop in today during Menards Project Day sale and pick up this Chamberlain Garage Remote for just $19.99 after rebate.
Save big money at Menards.
I don't see colored pills in a bowl. They're all amber to me. I'm the bottle of prescription painkillers, and when people pop my contents like candy, I'm the death of the party. In Wisconsin, prescription painkiller overdoses have increased by 260% among ages 12 to 25. A dose of reality I share with those who think prescription painkillers are a party favor.
Prevent prescription painkiller abuse in Wisconsin. Go to doseofrealitywi.gov.
Paid for by the Wisconsin Department of Justice, Brad Schimmel, Attorney General.
We have a lot of men and women who work with us, who really care about helping people.
My first vehicle was a 1962 Ford Falcon. Boy, I loved that car.
Jack Bergman, who everyone calls Bergie, was our sales consultant of the year in 2015, his fourth time winning the award.
My favorite Ford today is the all-new Ford F-150 truck. You can't buy a better truck, period.
I'm Rick Moore, the owner of Eau Claire Ford, Lincoln, and Quick Lane. Bergie loves helping people find either the right new Ford or pre-owned vehicle.
Bergie also loves to hunt and fish.
When I'm on vacation, you'll either find me on the water or in a tree stand somewhere. I'm Bergie, and I love being part of the team at Eau Claire Ford, Lincoln, Quick Lane.
Bergie cares so much about helping people, he gives them his cell number and tells them to call him anytime.
Go ahead, call him on his cell, 715-271-6008.
Bergie will even tell you how to catch a huge muskie, but he won't tell you where his favorite deer stand is.
At Eau Claire Ford Lincoln Quick Lane, it's not just about the cars, it's about people. That's the difference.
Though the tears may fall, my song will rise to you. Though my heart may fail, my song will rise to you. While there's breath in my lungs, I will praise you.
Ren Collective, off As Family We Go, one of our gift offers here during the month of April. For your suggested tax-deductible gift of 40 or more to WIB Incorporated, ask for Ren Collective, As Family We Go, from WWIB Incorporated. All right, Mark Halverson, Dr. Jason Kanz, retired Christian counsel Rob Gillette. It's our monthly crab conversation. Haven't had one since February, so we're due. And we're talking about chapters 14 through 16 in Larry Crabb's book, Shattered Dreams, God's Unexpected Path to Joy, under the banner of Wanting Something Better. So let's start with chapter 14, where Larry talks about making a strange wedding toast, right?
Mm-hmm. Jason?
Yep.
Why don't you talk about what he has in mind here a little bit, Jason?
Well, you know, he's talking about expecting his grandchildren to get married, and I like his imagery there about he says in my book here, well, and I suspect in all of our books, but a younger man will help this crotchety old man to stand, referring to himself, and he talks about offering a toast in response to the wedding, and he said that when he does this, he wants to pray a prayer of courage to be able to say things like, shield her from trials, but, and he says, grant me the courage to mean this, allow whatever dreams to shatter that will release her heart to meet yours, that will empower her to rest in your ecstatic love. And so he's offering a prayer that says, yes, please bless them. Please bless their marriage. Make their marriage strong. Keep it free from divorce. Give them lives free of troubles. But, do whatever it takes for them to know you more deeply. And I wrote in the column of mine, I wrote, would I want to pray this for my own children? And that's a hard thought when we think about praying those things for our kids.
But as I've come to get to know both of you, mm-hmm. I would be surprised if you haven't already.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I really would, because I think both of you have, you know, had some trials, had some different things mm-hmm. go on in your life, and have walked in a way during those trials that seemed like it was the wrong way to go.
Yeah.
It was a road less traveled, and it was full of ruts and miserable. And but when we get to the other side, we find what? The cross, and we find Christ.
Yeah.
And we find something that brings more joy than even the path we were on would have given us. And but while we're going through that time, it seems, you know, like a taste of hell. And to walk that path, to stay on that, we can only do that by praying and pleading our weakness. Mm-hmm. I can't make this. I need you to do it, even though I don't feel him. Mm-hmm. And so I would bet both of you have already walked that journey to a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a new thing to either one of you. This is something you've already been practicing.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you want God, you want your kids, you want for you and your spouse, and you want your kids and those you care about deeply to know God and make him known. Philippians 3:10, God, I want to, the Apostle Paul, I want to know you, the power of your resurrection, and then the hardest part of that, and the fellowship of sharing in your suffering. Yeah. But life is pain, Highness, and anybody who tells you otherwise is trying to sell you something. Princess Bride, it's true, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and this line here, I love this, and it says, reveal the beauty, this is in the prayer, reveal the beauty of your life to her and through her, whatever it takes. And then this sentence, but Lord, I beg you, be very gentle.
Uh-huh. Sure.
You know, because we read stories in the Bible of God allowing really hard circumstances. I've seen that in my own life, but that prayer of please be gentle. I really resonate with that when we see our families go through really tough stuff. There is that still that plea for God's gentle spirit.
Well, when we go back to what the toast was all about, we probably should read it at some point so people are kind of clued in on what the toast is. But it is. It's basically an elder gets up at the wedding of Boaz and Ruth and gives them a extended, what would look like a curse to most of us. Yeah. And especially if you knew the history of Israel, it really comes across as a curse.
Right.
But in reality, what it was may you not be so absorbed by this world that you lose sight of God and know God.
Right.
And, you know, wedding is exciting. Boaz had money. You know, she was beautiful.
Right.
It would look like everything was, you know, right on the table for him.
Yeah.
And this elder was praying in such a way that he wanted him to not get lost in those blessings, but to be able to always see the blesser for the blesser, even if he never gives you another blessing.
Right. And so the prayer is from Ruth 4.
Yep.
It says, this is what the elder said about Ruth. It said, may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house or into your home, may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. And
then verse 12, though the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So there's quite a background and explanation.
Yeah. Which is what? What is the background there?
Well, the background with Rachel and Leah was quite extensive in that my recollection of that particular chapter was Rachel was dreaming of children and really desiring children. And her
largely
husband.
Largely barren.
What's that?
So she was largely barren. Right?
Yes. Leah, her sister. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was married to the same man. She was able to keep bearing, but the problem was he didn't show attention and affection for her. He showed it for Rachel.
Right.
So it was this real domestic situation that was heartbreaking for pretty much everybody involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, out of it, if you pray that prayer for somebody at their wedding, it sounds like you really are a mean person and don't care at all. It just sounds so radical and so, you know, insensitive that it almost sounds abusive.
I think Larry Crabb has affected me, and he's made me difficult. We get many requests to pray for people's healing around here, okay? Yeah. And at church you do. And so I want that, but I feel like I work in there somehow. I mean, the highest thing is, God, that they'd get to know you better. I mean, because ultimately, even if you get healed, you're probably going to die at some point short of the second coming, right? So.
Well, you know, it's an interesting contrast, because this prayer here is about Rachel and Leah, who really didn't get along well with one another at all. And there was this deep longing. But the kingdom of God went forward through them. And then the offspring the Lord gives you, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Well, Tamar got pregnant by her father-in-law by disguising herself as a prostitute. And so that's an interesting prayer. I think Larry describes it as a bizarre prayer. Well, yeah, but the kingdom of God goes forward. And I think you contrast that with what people interpreted as the prayer of Jabez many years ago. Mm-hmm. Lord, bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, which is very much a, God, really make much of me and my possessions. And this is a much different prayer that we see here. But I would argue that in both cases, it is about God being glorified and him becoming bigger in our vision.
And it's also about bringing us to a point where if we get so we long for what's best for God, eventually we find things just happening in our life that's really far better for us than we could have dictated on our own terms.
Like, can you think of examples of what you mean by that?
Oh,
so are you saying
my
that there's finance that you might, that you're going to end up running into financial success if that?
Not necessarily.
Right. No. And I think that's an important
clarification. I think by a long shot. In fact, I think for a lot of people, there are a few people out there that can manage money well.
Yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of people can't. Mm-hmm. And I think as soon as they get a little bit of affluence, it distracts them from the flow of the Spirit.
Yeah.
And out of it, they start doing things just to feel good in the here and now.
Right.
And as they do, eventually, you're in a fallen world, you're going to have a dream shatter. You can't help it. Mm-hmm. So then what happens? You know, nothing wrong with having some blessings in the flesh, but when the shattered dream happens, what do we do? Mm-hmm. What do we do? Well, the wrong way to handle it would be to get to a point where we become embittered. And we become, you know, resigned and give up on God or fall into sin to bring back the comfort that we lost.
Yeah.
The right way to handle it would be to say, this must have happened for a reason I can't determine. And I'm going to surrender to God during this time. And it seems like the wrong thing to do. I feel like I'm going down the very, very wrong path. And it, you know, out of it, what would the ultimate outcome be? Would he give back your money? Would he give back your health? You know,
Maybe not.
It's a gamble because it's in God's hands.
Right.
It's not us controlling it. And the wrong attitude at that point in time would be to say to God, "I have to have these things back."
Right.
The demand of God that everything that was taken away comes back. You have to surrender to realize there was something about this he seen was causing you problems in knowing him.
The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord, from Job. I think in America, I mean, the American dream, and what you hear it in commercials all the time, that I want my kids to be better off than I was, right? I mean, but it's all about financial and material. I mean, what is God's heart? What is God's desire for your kids? I mean, that, how about that our kids would know him better than we do at an even younger age, you know, and however that might come
about. Do they get straight A's? Well, that'd be great. You know, it gives them opportunities in life and whatever. But what if they don't? What if they try hard and really don't succeed? You know, is that something that we feel like, you know, they're a failure? Well, maybe perhaps God has something planned here that we cannot grasp. And the real thing is, maybe, just maybe, He's trying to get them out of a worldly system and a world belief system that straight A's are great, perfect job is great, you know, the perfect spouse is great, into a world where he's first, and if he gives you those things, fine, but otherwise, I'm going to stay with him first.
Yeah. I was just going to add, I just finished teaching a two-week series at Cedar Creek on a title I stole from Scott McKnight, on it's called The Jesus Creed, which is love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength, love your neighbor as yourself. And one of the pieces I talked about in the love God section was the idea that as we begin to see the glory of the grace of God, our affections change, our passions change. And I think we see that in the parable of the buried treasure, you know, where it's a man who discovers this treasure is happily willing to get rid of everything he has for that treasure. And I think as we increasingly see how amazing God and his grace is, the pull of those other things begins to shift some.
But you gave me a book for my 50th birthday, Jason Cairns, and it was about Larry Crabb's seven questions. It wasn't by Larry Crabb, right. It was by
Kent Denlinger.
Okay, yeah. And so, but I think those questions are, each has to do with exactly what you're talking about, right? In terms of, as we get closer to God, these earthly things we let go of more and more. I'm letting go of politics more and more and just dumping it onto the garbage heap, saying, this is not going to be the answer.
Right.
And you know, and we grow up in a world, though, that all around us bombards us with messages. That's success.
Yeah.
You know, that's where what's going to make the fallenness of this world work. All world religions are based on that concept that they either will transcend the fallen world or they'll fix it. And Christianity is neither.
Yeah.
Christianity is absolute surrender to God, and maybe he fixes it. Maybe he gives us the strength to transcend it.
But I think a lot of times
we get to know him first and foremost.
Yeah.
A lot of times their perception, this leads us perfectly into a very short break, and then chapter 15 from Crabb's book, Shattered Dreams, which is, but life ought to work, because a lot of us buy it. We believe that, you know, all right, I'm a Christian and it's going to work now.
Right.
And I know when I walked that aisle of a Salvation Army church in May of 83, I was sick of hearing myself swear. I wanted to be good. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted more than anything else. I don't know that I wanted life to work. Man, I wouldn't mind that. But I mean, my parents got divorced 2 weeks later, so life wasn't working. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was working even less. But I want to talk about chapter 15 when we come back. There's other things, certainly from chapter 14, we could have delved into, but didn't get to. More with Jason and Rob, Mark Halverson, front page, WWIB.
No water, low pressure? Call Ken Olson Well Drilling and Pump Service. Just one call and three generations of experience get your water back running. Using industry-leading pumps and pressure tanks, quality is never an issue. If you're building new or relocating, Ken Olson Well Drilling does it all. From drilling and pumps to inspections and water sampling. When water is your problem, call the 7 days a week professional. Ken Olson Well Drilling and Pump Service, 715-832-7272.
In the dead of night, I'll lift my eyes to you. Though the waters rise, I'll lift my eyes to you. While there's hope in this heart, I will praise you.
Front page, WWIB, Mark Halverson, our monthly Crabb Conversation. We're a little more than halfway through with Dr. Jason Cairns and retired Christian counselor Rob Gillette. If you want to get into the conversation, you can. I noticed, Jason, as you posted about this, promoting it on Facebook yesterday, some folks were saying, hey, I was just reading Shattered Dreams, or somebody else said that's one of their favorite books. Yeah. So dive on in, 723-2555. 1-800-657-4769. Email mark@wib.com. Heritage Assisted Living and Heritage Court Memory Care in Eau Claire have immediate openings. Click on Lifestyle Options at heritagesenior.com. And to learn more about the Heritage family or schedule a tour, call 829-8000. And next time you're hungry, sometime later today, probably, here's a healthy snack idea from Omega Valley Farmers. Grab an Omega Valley Farmers Pepper Jack 1 ounce snack cheese and enjoy it with a handful of walnuts. Haven't tried that. There you go. And finally, Marco, your authorized Canon HP Konica Minolta dealer, Marco. All right, we're into chapter 15 under the banner of wanting something better, talking about chapters 14 through 16 from Larry Crabb's book, Shattered Dreams, God's Unexpected Path to Joy. I got to tell you guys more and more. I've had people say that when I pray, I start off most times with, God, thank you that you're good and what you do is good. And it's from Psalm 119.
Yeah.
But more and more, I have to say, as I go on this journey of the Christian life, I'm going to Isaiah 55 right after that with, but your ways aren't our ways and your thoughts aren't our thoughts. Mm. And that's what this book is, right? Shattered Dreams is telling you, a lot of you are looking for God to help out, fix the problems, and what happens when, hello, God, everybody we know has been praying for this for 2 months.
Right.
Well, okay. You know, if we go into 1 Corinthians 13, the chapter ends with, we know in part, then we'll know face to face. Was it God's playing games with us just to not reveal himself and keep himself vague? Or is it that we are being refined in this life to see him better and better and know him better and better, but we never get perfected in this life? And I think it's the latter. I think that that's what Shattered Dreams is about, to show us the illusion of the comforts of this life. To not say they're bad, but they're secondary.
Yeah.
And if it was all burned up right now, we have to be ready to go with God and nothing else.
Right. Well, I've been wrestling with a question just as somebody who's been a believer most of my life now, really struggling with, I'm not nearly as far along on the path as what, you know, earlier in life I expected to be. And I think that's where wisdom comes in, is recognizing that I'm still a sinner. God's grace is bigger, you know, and I was telling somebody at church yesterday, my knowledge of the Bible is much bigger than it was 25 years ago. But my understanding of God seems smaller because he just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I don't want to be mean-spirited. I don't mean to be, but I think sometimes young believers don't see that. They don't see that dreams do shatter. We do continue to struggle against flesh and blood.
Well, when we were off the air, we were mentioning Mark's comment about, you know, how he became a Christian. And I commented that, you know, I think he was genuinely a broken person. Mm-hmm. And needed to be where he would be teachable to know God
right
at that point in time because of the things, the way he described the circumstances. But, you know, in fairness to Mark, I mean, bottom line is, when I became a Christian, I think a lot of mine was 50-50. I knew I'd made a mess out of my life. And, you know, my motives were, I hope you can fix this up and, you know, give me a, you know, the 3.5 kids and the white picket fence, and I'll walk away from all this, you know, counterculture stuff I'm into.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took a few shattered dreams to hone that away from me, one of which was legalism. I got hooked in with a whole bunch of legalistic people that eventually it just broke my spirit.
Yeah. So before you got saved?
No, this was right after.
Afterwards.
Yeah, this was after. Yeah. And this helped me to start to say, do I want God? Or do I, because the legalists I was around were saying, if you do these things just right, your life should be working. You know, there was a real shaming quality about it. And I was doing them just right, and everything wasn't working out.
Right. Well, you know, I think that's why I'm so glad God included so many biographies in the Bible. I mean, I read the story of Peter, who was brash and very sure of himself early on in life. And he kept messing up. And there's a real softening of his spirit as he increasingly through his life learned to depend more and more upon the grace of God in the midst of his brokenness, in the midst of his mess. David, too, same thing.
Yeah. Let's go to chapter, by the way, I've made plenty of messes before and after I got saved, so just for the record. But here we go. But Life Ought to Work, chapter 15 from Crabb. Now, I'm going to read this and we'll comment. He says, a few days before the Columbine High School shootings, and we're coming up on the 17th anniversary of that in just a few days, one of the teenagers whose name will be forever associated with that tragedy wrote a poem. Here it is. I'm drowning in my own lake of despair. I'm choking, my hands wrapped around my neck. I'm dying. Quickly, my soul leaves. Slowly, my body withers. It isn't suicide. I consider it homicide. The world you created has led to my death. Now, Crabb says, had this poem been found in the diary of one of the shooters, we would have easily and quickly concluded that the sentiments expressed indicated that the writer was abnormally troubled and needed special help. But It was written by Rachel Joy Scott, a 17-year-old girl who, by all reports, was well-adjusted and quite normal. Troubled, perhaps, as all teenagers are, but certainly no threat to grab a gun and kill anyone. A young woman, we'd all assume, was doing just fine. So what about that in terms of, he goes on, builds the whole chapter on this in terms of somebody who had serious degree of distress of soul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say she was probably a pretty mature Christian.
Right on. That's exactly what my thought is, you know, and he touches on this in a little bit, a couple sentences later, where he says, we have this impression that normal people don't hurt very much. And when I see this in young people, especially, where there's this real depth of soul, I'm thinking, God has them further along on this journey than many adults we run into, you know, and because they're able to very honestly wrestle with, I'm dying inside. I'm hurting deeply.
And where does that come from, Jason? I got a couple theories, but I'm just wondering what you think.
Where does the theory
I'm dying come from, even though she's well adjusted?
I think
it's not a trick question.
No, I don't think it's a trick question at all. I think it comes from a recognition of life in this broken, fallen world. There's a recognition that life doesn't work the way it's supposed to.
It's kind of unconscious.
Yeah.
But as you mature as a Christian, you start to, it becomes more and more conscious.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think it gets back in part to that idea of how much different we are than God, how much different God is than us, how much more holy, how much more good, how much more gracious than we are with God. I was on the way up here today listening to a lecture series by Jim Houston, which is one of Larry Crabb's heroes, and he was talking about the transcendence of God and our inability to, you know, fully apprehend who God is. And I think that's partly where some of this stuff comes from, these feelings of recognition of life isn't working like it's supposed to. I'm made to connect with God. I'm made to connect with others. But in this world, I'm not.
Yes.
And there's a darkness, I think, that comes with that.
Well, yes, and you know, I you know, when a child is born, let's go back before the fall. The world did work before the fall,
right?
And all children were born into that world before the fall. There weren't any at that point in time, but if there would have been, they wouldn't have asked these questions or wrote a poem like Rachel Scott did,
right?
But now we're born into a world where all of our experiences, maybe from even, you know, pre-birth on, tend to show us something's not right in this world. People aren't going to treat me right. You know, I may not have the right things to take care of my health and, you know, shelter. All kinds of things to show us that. But that need for perfection that was put in us before the fall is still there.
Right.
And that is supposed to lead us to search, but instead what it's led us to do is try to manage this world and its resources to try to fill that emptiness.
The managed life.
Yeah, there you go. Manage versus mystery is the way Crabb breaks it down. And if you drop that in polite company, people will go, that's really good. But okay, let me just, for lack of time, let me just go to this. I've got this underlined. Crabb says, and it's page 137, I think, of the book you and I have, Jason, not to single Rob out, but God's intense desire is to intimately relate with us. Okay, we've agreed with that.
Yes.
One of my life verses of John 17:3. Check it out in that regard. For his desire to be realized, he must remove the obstacle within us more than any other that stands in the way of intimacy with him. That obstacle is this, and he writes this in italics. When we feel bad, when our internal experiences we live in this world is different from and less than what we know we were created to feel, we're created for, you know, a better place, we assume that there's no higher value than to change that experience. We therefore devote our central energies to feeling better and to justifying whatever does the job, right? We want to change those circumstances.
And that runs deep because people were made to tend the garden. And so we've twisted that and perverted it into, I will make this life work.
Right. The managed life.
Yeah.
And that's what ultimately he says this. He says, the belief that there's no higher good than feeling better now and the top priority or urge to feel better now, these represent the single biggest obstacle to enjoying God's presence. The Bible calls it the flesh.
Yes.
And that's, again, it comes back to when legalism is, this is a formula. This is a system. This is a way.
You do this and you'll get blessed right. and get to heaven. And
right.
Everything's good.
Yeah. He calls it, at one point, he refers to it as recipe theology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm going to kind of fumble through a discussion here. This is something that I was thinking about this morning that I think has relevance to what we're talking about. I was reading in Genesis this morning in the story of the Tower of Babel, and it talks in there about how the people had come together, figured out how to make bricks, and decided we're going to build. And so we're going to build this tower that ascends to God. And it's about, we're going to manage things. We're going to build our lives in a certain way. Well, what does God do? It says he confused their words, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always understood that to be, that's when languages came into being. And I think that's true.
That's a possibility.
It's a possibility. But as I was thinking about it this morning, which I've never resonated with in the past, is there an element in there of confusion of our ability to understand one another, of our ability to hear what other people are saying to us.
So we cannot unite and try to achieve God through our own effort.
We cannot unite, and that's part of this fault. We try and manage life by uniting in certain ideas, but part of the fall, part of living in a broken world is that we're not going to be able to manage all of those things. We're going to have confused relationships. We're going to have confused connection with one another.
Exactly. I heard, I was watching a video clip from a church here recently, and I won't go into details because it was very, very good, but I don't want to sound like I'm promoting churches.
Yeah.
And anyway, the person speaking was speaking on the topics of about gays and being single. And he was a former gay himself and has found Christ, and he has embraced celibacy because he doesn't personally feel he, with good conscience, he can go into embrace the idea of gay marriage.
Right.
And he said marriage is, from a lot of Christians, is our highest priority. You know, it's our highest ideal. But why it's our highest ideal is we don't go far enough back. If we go back before the fall again, the highest ideal was marriage with God, each one of us. And out of it, churches have taken that and twisted it so that unless you're married, you're not replicating that highest ideal. Where Paul was talking about in Corinthians, you know, celibacy has the benefits of not dealing with a fallen partner.
Right.
You know, and and so the highest ideal for all of us is not marriage per se in the flesh with another person, but marriage to God.
Yeah.
And he really did a nice job with this, laying it out there. And I think we need to look at that because there's some people that aren't meant to be married, whether they're gay or straight or whatever. Right. They're meant to be embrace celibacy. And out of it, we got to see them as married to Christ.
Well, and that gets back to what Mark was reading with us here just a bit ago, where it's, we assume there's no higher value than to change our experience, to change that experience.
Yeah.
We therefore devote our central energies to feeling better and justifying whatever does the job. So is that marriage? Is that certain political persuasion? Is that
vacations, anything.
Making money?
Yep.
As opposed to, what does it take for me to get married to God, to be closer in relationship with God? The idea of moving more and more deeply in understanding our union with Christ,
well,
the
back
power
in,
of the Spirit.
Yep. Sorry. Backing up a little bit, Jason, you know, as a psychologist, you've heard the Freudian theories of id, ego, superego.
I have.
You know, you're probably very, very familiar with them. And some theologians have argued those are parallel to the body or the flesh, the soul, which is fallen, and the spirit, which is perfect in having perfect law, perfect relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And so some people have argued that. Well, in Freudian theory, the ego is to be the traffic cop between the perfect, you know, and the flesh is just, I'll grab everything.
Yeah.
The problem was, once we disconnect with God, all we got is the traffic cop and the flesh left.
Right.
And so we hear the term egomaniac a lot. And then we even hear sociopath.
Yeah.
I argue as Christians, we're to make the twist that turns this whole thing inside out, and Shattered Dreams helps us to do this. And what the whole thing is to be is we're to be gaudiopaths. You know, we're to flip the whole thing up on its head.
We're going to wrap up our discussion on chapter 15 and get to one final segment coming up here. But in Larry Crabb, in chapter 15 of Shattered Dreams, says something I don't want us to neglect. He says, life is not an opportunity for things to go well so we can feel good. And that's a hard pill to swallow because we want it to be that. But he says, and I've underlined and started this, he says, life is an opportunity for us to be forgiven for requiring God to make us feel good and for turning from him when he doesn't. So how does that change occur to go from that demandingness that Rob, he says so much about in Marriage Builder, a book you used so much with clients over the years? It's brokenness. He says brokenness allows us to relax in the arms that will bring us to shore where a warm fire is burning and food has been prepared. The Elder's Toast from chapter 14 is a prayer for brokenness. And brokenness will lead you home, hopefully.
Yep.
To all the travelers, pilgrims longing for a home, from one who walks with you on this journey called life's road.
Time to spring clean your closets because the Peebles One Day Sale is on this weekend. Buy one, get one free on almost everything in store during doorbuster hours, Friday 2 to 9 and Saturday 9 to 4, or save all day online. Mix and match items across the store. Plus, buy one, get two free on all fine jewelry. Remember, you'll find all our latest savings offers online in today's deals. The One Day Sale starts Friday. Hurry into Peebles, part of our Stage family. Exclusions apply.
As an entrepreneur, you're always on the go. So turn your mobile phone into a business phone system with Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Make and receive business calls using our iPhone and Android apps. Get a new business number or keep your current one. Forward your calls to any phone and even get your voicemails transcribed. Join over 250,000 small businesses who stay connected with Grasshopper. See how it works at grasshopper.com, the entrepreneur's phone system.
Every year, thousands of Wisconsin kids enter foster care. That means every year, people like you open their homes to children in need of a loving, supportive family. Children's Hospital of Wisconsin's foster care program is looking for people to join our valued team of foster families. We call them Kid Heroes. Make a difference in your community and in the life of a child. Learn more about becoming a foster parent at chw.org/kidhero or call 715-835-5915.
It is a long and winding road from one who's seen the view. I dreamt of staying on the mountain's high and one who's cried like you.
David Curtis Chapman, not home yet, front page, WWIB. We talked about the Columbine anniversary coming up, 17 years. I believe that Not Home Yet was when there'd been a high school shooting at his own alma mater in Paducah, Kentucky, that he wrote and sung that song for them there, Not Home Yet. Front page, WWIB. Final segment, a short segment in our monthly Crabb conversation with Dr. Jason Kanz and retired Christian counselor Rob Gillette. We're talking about Larry Crabb's book, Shattered Dreams, God's Unexpected Path to Joy. His ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. And so a unique chapter title with chapter 16 where Larry suggests it's not always good to feel good. Mm-hmm. What does he mean, Jason?
Well, I think this is gets back to something we were talking about earlier, that in, I think you said it, Rob, in Western society, we see as our highest ideal feeling good, feeling happy, in a certain way that society or culture defines it. Unfortunately, when that happens, it sometimes leads us farther away from God. We end up being more disconnected from God when we are in a place where we have consistently good or happy feelings. I think I would.
But I'm going to the golf tournament yesterday. Yeah. I mean, who would have a greater likelihood to cry out to God? Is it when you just, you know, got a raise, you got your accomplishments recognized? I mentioned for the golfer yesterday, it was on his wife's birthday. She's back in the UK and they just had a son. I mean, it's all going good. He just shot a 67. Or when you've had huge disappointment. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are you more likely? Just that example, which we started the beginning of the show with, it's very much in the news and the sports world. I mean, it's out of that disappointment, right? Dan Allender says very memorably, who was a ministry partner with Crabb for a number of years, wrote Encouragement, Key to Caring Together and other things, is he said, listen, when I go out and really hit it out of the park in my speaking, that's when I'm most susceptible to temptation.
Right.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Brendan Manning says,
he didn't say that's when I'm closest to God, right? That's probably when we're furthest.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're susceptible to the temptation of what Satan did. I'm beautiful. I'm good. I'm better than God.
Right.
Well, you think of Jesus when the rich young ruler came up to him, you know, saying, God, I've kept all the rules, all this stuff. And Jesus says, go sell everything that you have and give to the poor. That's, sometimes I think we misconstrue that as being about the money, and it's not. I mean, it's Jesus is saying, I want to see happen in your life whatever will draw you closer to me.
Yes.
When we're really comfortable, when we always feel good, our desire, our longing for God gets drowned out by the louder noise of material success.
Well, he wasn't romanticizing poverty.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think we ever should do that.
Right.
I think, you know, if you're struggling for money, sometimes it's a day by day thing just to eat. And so we never want to do that. But what he was saying is, if you get to a point in life where your heart is counting on those things to take care of your life and manage your life, you need to start letting go of them, because you're dying spiritually.
Right.
And we want to be able to take anything out of our life that impedes that river of living water called the, you know, the flow of the Spirit into our life. Those things are all like rocks and debris from a big landslide that just fell into the river and dams off the flow of God. Yeah. And that's what he was saying. He wasn't trying to say poverty's good. He was saying where his heart was at was wrong with the wealth.
Yeah. And I wonder how much of that flows from, I feel really good about where I'm at right now. And Jesus shattered a dream for him, you know. And
we walked away very sad.
He did, right. Yeah.
Well, as we wrap this up here on WWIB and WIB.com, I just got to say, I mentioned at the outset, I was reading this aloud as we were making a family trip of about an hour. I was reading it a good chunk of that trip this past Saturday night. And being reminded of this, and I got to say, I was saying this to you guys before we went on the air, that I'm like, it's frustrating. I mean, this is dealing with who God is, that I believe it's often said about him that he cares about his kingdom and our character. And I think maybe I would like to say that, well, I'd like him to care about our character, but also sometimes, you know, like more immediate answers on some of those comfort prayers.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a big learning curve too. I want to know God as he is. And and intimacy is knowing
both.
Him better.
Yeah.
I want both. I'm with the biggest house on the hill, and I want to know God intimately.
Yeah. Right, right.
The problem is, the fall occurred, and you can't do both.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And
knowing him in the midst of his suffering, that's always a tough one to pray there.
You know, and I get questions all the time. I can't believe your kids aren't home from Haiti yet. That doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me either.
Mm-hmm.
But I know God is in it. You know, I think it was Larry's dad who said that.
Yeah.
Hush, God is in it. And we have that need to remind ourselves of, in hard circumstances, that God is in it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, over the past few years, we've had some trials in our home. I don't want to go into details. But the bottom line is, I remember one of them, and specifically, I had a problem with the disc in my back, and I paralyzed my left leg for a while. And I was laying there in bed, and I was going, now what? I'd always been a runner or a cyclist and everything else. And I was going, now what, God? And I was laying in bed after that, and he's going, you know, I couldn't see where this was going. I had my hope was shot, and the thing that kept coming to me was, it's all right.
Yeah.
It was like this current that was running under the circumstances that would, you know, give me hope in spite of the hopeless, what appeared to me hopeless anyway, circumstances.
Very good. You mentioned Larry Crabb Sr. One other quote. He was on this show with his dad, God of My Father, years ago. And just he's also known as the founder of the quote, God is delightfully unpredictable. We can recognize the unpredictable part. It's the delightful part we can sometimes struggle with. Thank you, guys. Dr. Jason Kanz, retired Christian counsel, Rob Gillette. We'll get the podcast up at wib.com.